Welcome to the Strong for Performance podcast, where we give coaches and consultants practical ideas for taking you to the next level in your business and in your life. I'm your host, Meredith Bell. I interview experts who've walked in your shoes and offer real-world experience that you can apply to your own journey. Welcome to another episode of the Strong for Performance podcast. I'm your host, Meredith Bell, and I am delighted to welcome back for a second interview with me, Dr. Pillay. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you so much, Meredith. It's a pleasure to be with you on your podcast.
Well, Dr. Pillay was my guest on episode 2 when I first launched the podcast, and he was just wonderful, and I wanted to welcome him back because he has a brand new book out. He is the best-selling author of 6 different books and multiple music compositions that have been featured in top Billboard and UK charts, and his brand new book is called The 7 Songs of a Successful Team. I read that and I loved it and I thought, how perfect, because I know Dr. Pillay is a colleague and friend, and the two areas that he is most passionate about come together in this one book. And that's one reason I'm so excited to talk to you about it today, because Dr. Pillay has a master's and PhD in organization and management. And he's also just an incredibly talented musician. He's written some really uplifting songs that I love listening to when I want them to just bring me up to a motivated, high-spirited way, although I don't often need that, do I, Dr. Pillay?
No, you don't.
And especially when you and I are together and have a chance to talk. But in this new book, Dr. Pillay has written a really interesting and entertaining business parable about the training and development of teams and employees and leaders. And so I'm really eager to get into that discussion because you and I share this passion for people. Yes. In the workplace and building strong leaders and strong teams so that people work together in a productive way. And I just love the approach you take in this book, tying it into principles around music. So let's jump into this, Dr. Pillay, by having you talk first about what led you to write this new book.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Meredith, thank you so much for that glowing and wonderful introduction. And you know what? I'm very fortunate because you can't tell I'm blushing. My skin doesn't, you know, I'm too dark for that. You can't tell. So, you know, but really, that was a great introduction. I appreciate it. The question of what led me here, I think you've sort of alluded to that, is really, this is my lifelong passion, finally coming together in a place where I am completely in personal harmony. And what I mean by that is, all my life, I've been driven to be a musician and to do music and to express myself through songs and so on and so forth. And all my life, I've also found a parallel area of expression or strength in teaching people things and helping people and being a trainer of other people. And so everything I've ever done, I've always felt just a little bit incomplete because my guitar wasn't around, my music wasn't part of it, or something like that. And finally, after being in human resources, I was a vice president of human resources at a healthcare facility several years ago, being an executive coach, leadership development training, being a vice president at Dale Carnegie training, you know, all these things finally came together when I brought music into the picture. So I'm so at home now. And I was telling my wife the other day, in fact, I'm just going to go ahead and admit this. I told her in tears that if for some reason this is the end of my life, I'm okay now because I've written the book. I've written the 7 songs of a successful team. This is the one book that is my essence. And I'm so happy to have been given the chance to do it. So that's kind of how I got here, is I needed to do this. I've been unhappy and unfulfilled in other things, even though they brought me money here and there and success, titles and all these things. But now I'm able to actually put my music in the center of my offering to clients.
That's That's so exciting because I've seen you singing and I see how your spirit just comes out in such a beautiful, magnificent way. You have such depth there. And I also have seen how much you care about other people. And I sense that in reading your book, just how everything came together so beautifully there. And I want to go a little deeper with certain things because you introduce a really interesting model where you've got a concept from music and then you have an equivalent concept related to teams and the workplace. So talk a little bit about what led you to create that model and what are some of the elements of it in terms of how somebody listening could take that and say, oh, I see how I could relate to that and use that.
Yeah, no, great point. You know, I would start by saying I feel extremely fortunate that somehow I am a conduit for this message, because I actually believe this message is that powerful and that unique. I don't know that anybody else has taken the elements of music and compared them at a parallel level with the elements of teamwork and created an equivalency that can be used to teach teamwork. I don't know that that's ever been done. And you and I know how rare it is to say something has never been done. That's right. Like, you know, what are we talking about? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but my unique circumstances led me there. And the magic of it all really started from something you are an expert in, Meredith, and that is the idea of learning transfer. Mm-hmm. You know, we both know that learning transfer is probably the number one problem of training, where some 85% of the return of the investment, sorry, put into training is reportedly lost. Now, I don't know if that's actually inaccurate. I know some people argue about what that percentage is, but everyone agrees that transferring learning into action and results is the hardest thing to do with training, mm-hmm. right? And you, your business, your product, you are experts at solving that problem, but there's something else that has done that forever, and that thing is music. If you look at how you and I learned our ABCs, we learned it to the tune of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Mm-hmm. That little piece of association between a concept of 26 elements and a melody of a song that we all love to sing has lasted all of our lives. Just think about that. Mm-hmm. And yet nobody has written a book on the power of music's learning transfer capability. I think that's a book. So I did research on it and I went back and I said, okay, how does music do this? And guess what I found? Music is probably the one thing, which is also a language, by the way, that we all innately understand. And when it gets lodged in our brains, it won't let go. It goes into every part of our brain, the emotional centers, the cognitive, the learning centers. It just goes everywhere. And that's why there's this whole branch of study and practice called music therapy. People with Alzheimer's or maybe a brain injury, one of the ways they can bring them back to remembering things is music. Hmm. And so I found that the science supported learning transfer via music, but no one had implemented it yet in learning and development. And so that's what really got me going. Now, as I was doing more research, I found several others, but I'll give you just two more powerful things that music does. Music, again, through the neuroscience of music, has this power of bonding and creating community with those who listen to or perform music. And it's based on a lot of research around a term called entrainment. Entrainment is this ability that we all have. We're just born with it. In fact, music is probably one of the languages, or if not the language, we learned before speaking. You know, my little son would sing Justin Bieber's Baby, Baby, Baby before he could talk. You know, it's just fascinating. So music allows us, entrainment is this idea that we can sort of follow a melody and a rhythm without knowing anything about it. And before you know it, we're connected with other people who are doing the same thing. It's like a mutual community building. Music does that. That's why when a band like Queen creates a song like, we will rock you. You can't help but be taken by that anthem when thousands are singing it. It's like, it's a way that we human beings transfer emotion. Mm-hmm. And because we transfer emotion through music, guess what? The learning centers, the most powerful way to create action from learning is to connect at people's emotions. If you just tell people, hey, go do this job, go do that job, yeah, they'll do it. But if you connect an emotion to it and give them a reason to do it for themselves, they're off to the races in a much more powerful way. So the community building, the emotional connection of music, and the engagement that music forces on us, I mean, you can't unlisten to a good song. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't unlisten to it. So in the same way, I took those elements of music, which are, you know, several neuroscience elements, and I started saying, what can I do? Because music has solved the problem of harmony. What can I do to bring it to teams who also need to solve the problem of harmony? And last thing I'll say is that, you know, if you want to learn how to fly, you need to go ask a bird. Don't ask me, because I don't know how to fly. That's not, nature didn't solve that problem with me or with you. But a bird, and this is what the Wright brothers did. Their entire research was based on the flight patterns and approaches of birds. And they copied the concept of flying from birds and brought it into airplanes. And now we're flying around like we're birds. So if you want to learn how to solve team harmony, just look around in nature. Where has nature solved the problem of harmony? Where? One of the best examples of where nature has solved the problem of things needing to fit together in harmony is music. And so I took the principles and the rules and the building blocks of music, did my research on that, and applied it to teams, and it works beautifully. So that's kind of where I'm at.
That's great. Well, there are so many things there that you said that I just resonate with, because I think that's really true. As you were talking and you were mentioning different songs, I thought back to We Are the World.
We Are the World.
That was another one that really evoked emotion way back when.
Yeah.
But also I was thinking, even in the 70s, there are some commercial jingles that still I could recite from memory just because they were associated with music.
Yeah. Now, what if the vision of your company was that, okay, we are going to do things this way or that way, and everybody needs to remember it, and we need to embody it, and it needs to be us. What if we put that to music, and everybody loves the song and sing, and they sing the song, and so on and so forth? All of a sudden, you're bringing in the mental and emotional power of community building that music forces, the power of learning transfer that music forces, and so on and so forth. And you have a thing that you didn't have before. So training, for me, sure, people can use the traditional. In fact, my book is full of traditional methods of coaching and assessments and all those things. You can do all those things. But when you sprinkle a little bit of the power of music for creating harmony, it just fills up the picture, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm thinking of your model, too. At the base, you had elements around the individual. Mm-hmm. And the tie-in with your assessments that you were just talking about. So talk a little bit about how those individual elements are sort of the foundation that build then towards the ability for them to work together in harmony.
Yeah, no, great point. You know, if you look at companies today that, and you and I both basically live by some of these statistics, like $300 billion are spent every year trying to reduce stress. People at work are under stress. Or what's the one on engagement? 85% of, or so of all employees are disengaged, some actively, some trying to spoil things even. Mm-hmm. in companies, when you think about those kinds of very negative assessments of the state of employees, you start to realize that what's really happening is companies are very good at pointing to where they want to go, the results they want to achieve. They measure the sales reports, the marketing stuff, the, you know, the customer satisfaction. They measure all those things, but they're not very good at who is going to do the what that they're pointing to. And so I call that the who gap, okay? That who gap means we're not paying enough attention to the happiness, the wellness of individuals. Okay. Now, if you look at the definition of music, this is another thing that blew my mind. Music is defined as individual sounds coming together, being organized to produce music, which tells a story, right? Mm-hmm. Teamwork is defined, if you think about it, as individual people coming together, being organized to produce teams that create a success story of some kind. So, I mean, with this kind of parallel stuff going on, it's like, wow. So, okay, how do individual elements in music interact in order to successfully create harmony? How does that work? Well, it's simple. You got to have pitch, you got to have timbre, and you got to have rhythm before you have anything that's even remotely called music. Right there that's a rule. That's a principle, meaning there's a stepping stone. It's a foundation. First, deal with individuals. Deal with your people first before you bring them together. If you don't fully deal with their personality, which are the parallel elements, their emotion and their strengths, you don't fully understand that and have them understand that. Forcing them together into a team is like a prescription for trouble. So that's kind of why the individual is the important thing that's going to deliver the success you want. So focus on them, not just the sales results. Focus on the happiness of your people, which is another reason why my company is called Profitable Happiness. Because if you do that first, you'll get team success.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that, profitable happiness, because I love those two words and I would think they would resonate with everyone that's listening. But what was your reason for putting those two together?
Well, first of all, happiness is almost an industry now. And we all know that everyone wants to be happy. People talk about workplace happiness, and there's a lot of buzz around the word happiness. But at the same time, there's a little danger to that because there are different kinds of happiness. There's the happiness we feel sort of temporarily. There's the very misunderstood happiness that a lot of people feel after understanding Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which seems to say, but it's wrong actually, it's misunderstanding, get your stuff, your money, your possessions right first before you start to do self-actualization and happiness. That's kind of wrong, but a lot of people have moved in the direction of that kind of happiness. It's a temporary happiness. You're waiting to feel happy. The kind of happiness we're talking about is a happiness you do. Happiness is an action. It's not a feeling. And you create happiness. You invent it daily by doing things. And it's that kind of happiness that leads to great teamwork, great business success, and therefore profitability. So I wanted to make the distinction that we're in the business of creating happiness that creates profitable teams and profitable businesses.
That's so great because to me, it reinforces the effect that you want to produce when people work well together, mm-hmm. that they are actually enjoying their time with each other and not waiting for, 5 o'clock or whatever.
Yeah. Friday.
They can leave. Yeah. Yeah. The idea that there's real joy.
Yeah.
Did you notice that
in my book, I used Thank God It's Friday as the place where they met for that conversation?
Yes.
Yeah. That was my little hidden thing. Yeah.
That was great. There were a number of really interesting little pieces that were in there that I thought, oh, that's pretty clever, the way that you built those together. But I think that's really important. It's not sacrificing profit. It's not sacrificing. And to me, happiness implies way more than just job satisfaction.
Yeah.
You're looking at genuine, deep sense of fulfillment. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's where true happiness comes from, when you feel fulfilled in the things you're doing.
Happiness is you. When I met you, even looking at your background and the work you do over the years I've known you now, you are doing you are doing a calling. Nobody's forcing you. You love what you do. Mm-hmm. I've only just recently arrived at that. And I think all of us have that ability to find happiness, but it's not out there somewhere. It's in here. Mm-hmm. And so when you know that you're there, you'll know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to ask you about another term that you use, because we hear so much about emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
You use the term emotional literacy. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about what you mean by that compared to, say, emotional intelligence.
Great question. So first of all, emotional intelligence is the big word that everybody knows. And mm-hmm. But it's also a little bit too complicated. There's a lot of research around emotional intelligence. It's almost like they've created quantifications of it, quotients for it. It's just too much. Then I found this gentleman online. His name is Dan Newby, and he is the founder of something called the School of Emotions. And just a little, it was on LinkedIn, and I saw his article, and I read it, and I was fascinated because he took all of that emotional intelligence stuff and he put it aside. He got out of the clinical definitions and the science, and he just said, you know, people don't know how to, they don't know how to describe basic emotions. They don't know what happiness is or what sadness is or what they're feeling. Sometimes they're feeling one thing, but if you ask them enough questions, they'll realize they're not actually feeling that thing. They're feeling something else. Mm. So he set about to create almost like a dictionary of emotions based on the research, but just the emotions, and then describe what they are. And he provides that as little cards that you can play and different methods that he teaches. So I became basically a student of Dan's. He's also a colleague. We collaborate in business, but I really learned his methodology, and he fully endorses and supports mine. And for me, literacy is a first step. If we just confuse people with the emotional intelligence jargon and we don't give them something tangible to work with, like, okay, tell me, how do you feel right now during this coronavirus COVID-19 situation? This is one of Dan's approaches, and it's actually in my book. Some people would say, "Well, I feel fear, I feel uncertainty, and I feel doubt." Okay, now let's define those. Let's give them names. Let's actually understand those words proactively. Then, when you go that level to a point of literacy, it's at that point that you can say, "Okay, now what can we intentionally replace these feelings with? What can give us the confidence to move forward, the peace to survive this," right? And before you know it, we are moving things from a place where we can't control what we feel, like the fear and the uncertainty and to the doubt, to intentionally bringing emotions that we can control. We can say, okay, I'm going to do some more research, learn what's available, understand that this is a temporary situation that won't go away, and so on and so forth. So this ability to move emotions from out of control to in control is a powerful thing. And it's a simple, small thing that literacy brings to bear. Doesn't remove anything from emotional intelligence, but this is just that top level that says, you know what? This is what fear means. Mm-hmm. And
it's that whole thing of truly understanding the meaning of something and connecting with it on an emotional level to really grasp What does this mean, and what impact does this have on how I think about it and how I respond to it when I actually have that sensation, whatever the feeling might be?
Exactly. And it doesn't take away anything from emotional intelligence, the ability to be interdependent and to relate accurately to other people by knowing sort of what emotion is in the air and developing that, those skills. Those are still good. But how far can you move if you don't even know what those skills are, mm-hmm. and when you're feeling them, you know, and so on and so forth. So that's
the first step. It ties back really to that whole self-awareness element, because to me, the internal part of self, of the emotional intelligence, is managing yourself.
Yes.
But first, you have to be aware.
Exactly.
And so it sounds like that's where the emotional literacy really comes in, is raising that awareness.
Exactly.
There's another element of your book that I really liked, and I just see it as being so important in terms of teams working together, and it's such a core element of music, the harmony aspect.
Yes.
And I wanted to just pull in a piece that where you talk about that in your book. You were saying the harmony in a team relies on trust, and that this has to do with psychological safety in conversations and people speaking the truth. So talk a little bit more about that and how those elements contribute to harmony.
Yeah, just thank you for such great questions. And I'll try to keep this very bottled in or brief, if you will. So first of all, if you think of the ultimate goal of music, that ultimate goal is harmony, because everything in music, all the elements of music work together to produce harmony. Now, whether harmony for you is jazz or it's, salsa or pop music or Afrobeat or whatever that is, this mind of ours seems to interpret harmony very well. It's just like, oh, I get it. That's harmony. That's not harmony over there. This is, and so on. And I found that in the same way, a team uses sort of the marketplace results as the ultimate evidence as to whether they've been working in harmony. And I asked, you know, what is that thing on a team that really allows us to be in harmony? And it's trust. It's me really trusting you, because look, if I can't trust you and you can't trust me, how on earth are we going to leverage our strengths to the maximum, right? And how do you achieve trust? Trust happens because people feel safe to trust each other. That's where the point of the idea of psychological safety comes from. If I feel that if I say something that makes me vulnerable, that you're going to jump all over me and I'm just going to be like destroyed, I won't say it. And so here we are. Most of us walk around the world doing what I call Minnesota nice. You know, I used to live in Minnesota. Everybody's nice and they've got this thing called, ooh, Minnesota nice. Yeah, sure. You betcha. You know, and we're all just sort of nice. There's no real conflict. There's no real truth telling. You know, one of the things that, you know, I've told you this before, that I love about you, Meredith, is you are able to look at me and you're almost like my coach sometimes. You can say, Pelé, okay, here's what I think you need to do. And it's whether it hurts my feelings or not is not the way you come across. You're just honest and transparent with me. That's what's needed for people to trust each other. I know I can bring my failings to you. I can bring my successes to you. Nothing will be turned away. And that's what everybody on a team needs to share so that they can play this game together successfully. That's how I look at the power of, you know, trust versus harmony on a team to create success.
You know, to build on what you just said, it's hitting me. A core underpinning there is that we each want what's best for the other person. Because when you talk about how I respond to you, you take it without getting defensive because you know I have your best interest at heart. Yeah. It's not anything personal. If I'm giving you a suggestion, it's not putting down anything you've done or said up to that point. It's looking at, here's something I see as possible for you. And I think where we get into problems with teams, thinking back in my own history when I was less evolved, let's say, in my own thinking, and I would get my ego wrapped up. If someone said something to me, I interpreted it as criticism and would get defensive. And then we get into this verbal battle back and forth, which is not based on trust, not creating harmony. And so I just agree with you so much in what you're saying about trust being like the underpinning of everything.
Yeah. And you know what happens when we all feel the way you just described? We run away to our safe spots. We run away to the places where nobody's going to destroy us, or we don't have to destroy anyone, you know, and so on. And that's a lack of psychological safety.
Yes. Yeah. So imagine everybody backed into their respective corners.
Exactly.
And trying to produce high results. It's not going to happen. And what I think of in relating this to music is just thinking about, I don't even want to use the word songs, sounds that don't work well together, and it just hurts your ears. You know, it's painful to listen to.
It's called dissonance.
There you go. And so if we have that in life with people we're trying to work with or live with, the solution is finding ways that we can speak honestly to each other, because that to me was the other part of that whole harmony piece, is the willingness to speak the truth, speak your truth to someone else.
That to me, you know, I'm blessed, and I think that we've talked about this before, but in life, when you find a partner, you know, my wife, for example, the blessing I have is that we have psychological safety. It's not just for teams, but for marriages, for any human interaction. I just feel the safety to be who you are truly and bring your best strengths and your personality and feelings to the table. That's where it has to begin. Now, I had a boss once. This still blows my mind. She's a very successful, entrepreneur in the business world. But she said to me one day, you know, I don't believe all this emotional stuff, okay? We're not here to do emotions. Just get the job done and just... you know what that does to everybody? it shuts everybody down. Because now, okay, I know what I'm feeling, but you're telling me that there's no room for emotions at work? That's the core of being human. So, yeah, you know.
It is. And it's true. And it gets you to think about, and I would encourage everybody to think about their own environment, whether it's at work, at home, socially, any area where you're interacting with others, and how safe do you feel in being able to share honestly with that person, and also what's holding you back? Because I think that when we get honest about it, we can see what is it about that dynamic that's creating challenges for us. And so let's shift into your music-based training, what you were referring to early on, because I think that this is really significant. Why, let's go back, why is it you feel that that has the potential to have that lasting impact on people when they go out of the training and back on the job and need to implement what it was they learned in the training?
Yeah, no, everything we do in life is based on communicating through language, right? You're speaking to me, I'm learning from you, and you're sending me back out into the world. I find it almost amazing that most of business and humanity has left off probably the most natural language we all possess, which is music. You don't have to be a musician who plays music to understand music. It's both listeners and performers. We understand the language of music right from the very beginning of our lives. So why not include that part of our language in the way we teach people things and in the way we help them implement those things outside of the workplace, or back at the workplace rather. My struggle has been to find the right terminology. I don't know if music-based training is the best one, because sometimes I feel people think I'm talking about coming to teach you music. You know, but it's a start. And I'm just looking for a way to say, let's bring the language and the terminology and things like harmony, you know, into the language of training, team training, leadership training, and let's see how far we can take that. Because, you know, it has to be, look, here's the big problem. Music has always been about entertainment. And then more recently, music has now become about therapy because of the science that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to do is move music away from therapy and entertainment and into learning and development. That's my mission. If you think of what Dr. Martin Seligman did by creating positive psychology, that's what he did. He basically said, listen, we're always using psychology only for therapeutic requirements. Psychology could actually be used to help people become better without them being ill, without them having a problem. Just help people become better at their work, become happier in their lives. That is a role for psychology. Hence our recent new positive psychology movement. Dr. Seligman, who's still alive, by the way, pioneered that. Now, I'm not, you know, trying to go beyond my britches here or claim that I'm going to achieve anything that big, but why not move music away from therapy and entertainment and move it into learning and development? Why not? That's where I'm at.
That's great. Well, I think it you've made a strong case for it. And of course, with your skills as a musician, you are in a perfect position to be able to do that. And that kind of brings me, because of where we are with time, is to ask you to share how people can learn more about you, connect with you, and get access to some of the wonderful songs you've written that tie in with your book. I just love the way you brought your music into the book itself and made your songs available for people.
Thank you so much. And you know, the whole point of making every chapter a song is part of the whole transferring the emotions. You know, I want you to go away remembering Robert, who has just died, because I wrote a song called Dear Robert.
And I was listening to that.
It
was
wonderful. Yeah, and it's almost impossible to not forget, or rather to forget that now, because wow, the association has been done by music. So that's why I did that. But the best way to reach me is drpele.com. That's www.drpele.com, drpele.com. And on that site, you will get access to my book. You could buy it on Amazon from links there or go to Amazon directly. And the music is on iTunes. Actually, it's now called Apple Music and Amazon, Google, Spotify. It's on all the different outlets that sell music. Just search for Dr. Pele or search for The Seven Songs of a Successful Team.
And you,
by the way, the book has arrived. So,
oh, excellent! Hold that up again.
The
Songs of a Successful Team. That's great. Congrats.
This is a promotional copy. That's why you have that. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's great. I love the picture of you on the cover too. And you also have a podcast. So let my listeners know about that if they'd like to add another podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
So again, on my website, drpele.com, there's a link for the podcast and it's called Profitable Happiness, the podcast. And actually, if you type in Profitable Happiness on the internet looking for it, it'll take you to my site anyway. So the Profitable Happiness site where we interview people like Meredith to come talk about how your tools help us become happy in a profitable way at work.
That's great. Well, Dr. Pele, thank you so much for joining me today. And I'm really excited about helping to get the word out about your wonderful new book and this whole idea of tying in music to training for greater retention and greater application back on the job. Thank you again. I love the work you're doing in this world.
Thank you so much, Meredith. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Strong for Performance podcast. Now head over to growstrongleaders.com to learn how our tools can increase your impact with clients and expand your business. And while you're there, grab our free ebook, The 5 Secrets to Getting Better at Anything. Until next time, I'm Meredith Bell. Make it a great day.